You're listening to Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG. We are online at kpcg.fm. There's a live link at the trumpet.com, and you can listen to us there also on the TuneIn app as well. Trumpet Radio Live, this is the Tuesday edition. Dwight Falk and Abraham Blondeau with you here today. And the Republican National Convention got started last evening, I guess. Must-see TV.
Yes.
I forgot to see it. I didn't forget. I just didn't. I didn't. I think I saw about 2 minutes of it, and that was enough. Did you watch any of it?
I just saw highlights on the internet. I didn't watch any speeches or anything for a long time. Just the huge crowds and everything can be a little overwhelming, I think.
Yeah, they started out with, I guess, protesting against the nomination of Trump, and then that got put down, and they moved on with business. So, of course, the big news today, the big headline, as far as that goes, is the news outlets can't believe that Donald Trump's wife apparently plagiarized some of her speech. This headline says, some of Melania Trump's speech at GOP convention similar to Michelle Obama remarks. So they're quite up in arms about this. Here's what Melania Trump said last evening. She said, quote, from a young age, my parents impressed on me the values that you work hard for what you want in life, that your word is your bond, and you do what you say and keep your promise, that you treat people with respect. They taught and showed me values and morals in their daily life. Okay. So in 2008, Michelle Obama said this, and Barack and I were raised with so many of the same values, like you work hard for what you want in life, and your word is your bond, and you do what you say you're going to do, that you treat people with dignity and respect, even if you don't know them, and even if you don't agree with them. So those are pretty similar statements. We were talking about this earlier, and I don't know how big of a deal it is. I don't think it's that big of a deal. But if you want to go back and look at the history of political speeches, I think they're all kind of the same, aren't they? I mean, what else are you going to say? What wish you could have maybe changed the phrasing a little bit, but are you going to get up there and say, you know, yeah, I was raised with no values and I plan to bring that with me to Washington? Of course that's what you're going to say. So I don't know why people are so upset about it.
Yeah, it is something interesting that has just dominated the headlines this morning, that of everything that happened last night, this is the story, especially when it comes to speeches. Like you said, there's phrases that we hear all the time, and doesn't mean that they're plagiarized. It's just, even the Trump campaign said, well, they're common words. Like, it's just, they're just saying some common things. There's plenty of phrases or ideas that each president or political person reiterates in basically the same way. And especially for the first lady, where she's not, or the apostle first lady, she's not really, she's not a figure or anything like that. It's, I think they're making it too much for what it really is.
Yeah, she's not laying out policy. And every campaign or speech that I can remember for the last 20 or so years always has the same basic talking points. We're going to lower taxes, bolster the middle class, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah. Maybe she should have had been a little more creative, I guess, with the phrasing. The other thing, though, too, is these people don't write their own speeches for most part. So I don't know why they're mad at her. They should just talk to the speechwriter,
right?
Who wrote this? They said it was a collaborative effort. So I don't know exactly what they mean by that. My guess would be that a speechwriter writes your basic speech, and then you know, they look it over and maybe tweak a thing here or there. It'd be really interesting to get the people that actually write this stuff, like, up on the stage and say, well, we know that those people over there are the ones running, but you're the ones that write everything, so why don't you just talk about what you think? And if they agree, they'll just nod their head and make it more interesting.
That's right. Yeah, it's we should get our speech writers on the radio and see if we can do the same thing.
Yeah. But, yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, it is interesting just that it does show a reality of politics, just how cookie cutter it is, or that how much they rely on people we don't even see or hardly even know. The only speechwriter I know right now is Ben Rhodes, because he was in the news. Otherwise, I don't know who's writing all these different people's speeches that change policy and that are impacting this nation significantly.
Maybe we've discovered that Melania Trump's speechwriter is Michelle Obama. Maybe she's writing all of her speeches
for her.
Yeah. No one's thought of that.
That's a mind-blowing theory. So.
What? Yeah, it's interesting. But it is funny when you hear some of these remarks, you know, raised with so many of the same values. You work hard, you know, your word is your bond. You do what you say you're going to do. That's interesting because I'm reading a book right now that literally highlights, it has chapters and chapters of just all the lies out of the current administration. And you could probably do that with most administrations, but this one happens to be the book that it's written about. And your word is your bond. Okay. Right. And I just wonder, it'd be interesting if Hillary Clinton tries to use the same speech.
Right.
She might have a harder time getting people to believe that one. But anyway, that's one of the headlines today. More importantly, over in Germany, there was another terror attack. This is from the Mirror. Germany train axe attack. Recap. They recap the story here. Is 18 injured after teenage refugee shouted Allahu Akbar and hacked passengers. So this is gruesome. Obviously, it didn't do as much damage as some of the other attacks recently, but still just horrifying. It says 18 people were injured after a man armed with an axe went on a bloody rampage after storming a train in Germany. Armed police swarmed the area soon after receiving reports that a man hacked at passengers on board a train close to the Würzburg in southern Germany. Police have confirmed that 18 people have been injured in the horrifying attack. Three of them are fighting for life. So no fatalities yet, but that could change. A 17-year-old Afghan refugee believed to be behind the attack was shot dead by police as he reportedly charged at them following the incident near the Würzburg Heidingsfeld station. The boy is reported to have shouted Allahu Akbar before the attack, and investigators believed he had become a self-radicalized Muslim. ISIS came out and claimed responsibility. So, horrifying situation there, and the Europeans, I'm sure, have had just about enough of this type of thing, where your citizenry is going about their normal routine on a train and they get attacked by a guy with an axe. At some point, they're going to say, look, this is enough, and take some strong action against these things.
Well, yeah, it's especially with the horrific Nice attack just last week. A few days later, you have one in Germany. And I think a lot of Germans are afraid that more terrorism will spread to their country because it has been limited to Belgium and France over the past 6 months. At least the attacks actually happened. Germany has stopped it, planned attacks. So it'll be interesting to see the reaction, especially since more and more information keeps coming out about the Cologne attack, the sexual assaults on New Year's Eve and all these things. And I think even the fact it was a teenager is significant too, because you have, I think I read 2 million people migrated to Germany last year. Not all of them were from the Middle East, but in total, people from different European countries and everywhere. So, and a lot of them are from the Middle East. So I would be very worrying to a lot of people, especially since Angela Merkel and other leaders keep saying, like, well, just give it time. Like, it's an isolated incident. Like, well, this can only go on for so long until they want these things to stop.
Yeah, I saw a report the other day. It was just after the Nice attack, and they had on a former, I forget what he was. He was involved in the intelligence community on some level. And he said that what he was seeing on social media was that the next few attacks were going to be in Germany. And this would have been last, I guess, Thursday is when they talked to him. And he said that, you know, they of course keep their finger on the pulse of what social media is saying, and not that that's all accurate, but he felt there were some credible threats towards Germany, and he said he was in contact with them because he does have some colleagues in the German intelligence agencies, and so this obviously isn't a huge one. I mean, it didn't even make top headlines, but still, it just shows the attitude that's out there. And even a smaller attack like this, well, what if you get 10 guys doing it at one time, or 20, or 30, or 40? You can do a lot of damage even without guns. And so when people have the weapons like guns, obviously they can kill more people. But this is just next level gruesome, being hit with an axe or something like that. So it'll be interesting to see how this continues. Of course, German elections aren't too far down the road, and I don't think the nation is too excited about Angela Merkel's response to these things, of course. And so it'll be interesting to see how that pressures these upcoming elections and so forth. But that's what happened there in Germany last evening. But it does show the media's, I guess, what they make important. I mean, this should be really the top story, and yet it's buried down 3, 4, 5 lines down in the headlines, and they all want to talk about a speech at the RNC that really is irrelevant. So kind of interesting. The other thing that I found interesting about this little write-up here is they say this guy was a self-radicalized Muslim. That seems to be a little bit of a new term lately. At least I haven't paid much attention to it before. What's the indication there? I mean, when you say self-radicalized Muslim, what's that saying? Is that saying nobody radicalized him? He wasn't part of a bigger group. He just took it too far personally? Do you think they're saying this to kind of distance these attacks from Islam?
Well, I did see a headline where they found a note in his apartment or wherever he lived, and they said based on that note they assumed that he was self-radicalized. They did find a homemade ISIS flag in his apartment too. However, I mean, that's self-radicalized, like you said, is a bit of an ambiguous term. If you decide to follow something, I wouldn't say you're self-radicalized. I would say that you're following the Islamic State or that ideology, whatever it is. So I think that is a way to say that it's not coordinated, that it's a lone wolf attack. In other words, that's the term we use in the U.S. more often, is that, well, this person, they had nothing to do, it has nothing to do with Islam or their lifelong habits, beliefs, what they've been thinking about their whole lives. It's more about all of a sudden they just became radicalized and they decided to use violent action. And to me, that is a way to dismiss the bigger and more complicated problem that's facing them.
Yeah, it seems like it's trying to just solely place guilt on the one individual that, or the two, or how many ever that did it, and then say, well, you know, that's the way it goes. We've even seen that here in the U.S. with some of the police shootings where, well, they don't represent any group and we don't know why they did this, when very clearly they're following some sort of ideology. Now, whether somebody showed up and told them that these are your marching orders, now that probably didn't happen, but still they're following a very specific message. And so to try to separate the message, whether it's this radical Islam or whether it's, you know, this anti-police rhetoric, that can't be put out there and then have somebody commit an act like this. And then those people putting out those messages say, well, we didn't tell them to do it. You know, they're self-radicalized. Well, they're guilty because, you know, the people putting the message out there are guilty. So it's just interesting how these new phrases seem to pop up that try to whitewash everybody, I guess. Like, it's nobody's fault. This guy was just self-radicalized, or this guy was just, you know, mad and we don't know why, when we all know why. So it's just interesting to see how they're trying to make some separation there. Speaking of immigration, there continues to be a problem at the southern border here in the U.S. It doesn't get a lot of headlines anymore because of the political season we're in, because of other attacks that have taken center stage. But there's still a lot of people pouring across the border. This is from the San Diego Tribune. It says fewer than half of those nabbed at the border are from Mexico. It's pretty interesting. There's a lot of people coming across, but they're not all from Mexico. They say in the first 6 months of the year, 264,165 people were apprehended somewhere along the southwest border, which is interesting because how many weren't apprehended? 49.6% of them were from Mexico, according to data from the U.S. Border Patrol, so more than half are not. Here are the top countries in terms of population, or in terms of numbers of people that have come into the U.S. Mexico is number one. They've had 131,138 come in. Again, this is the first 6 months of this year, and these were the people that were caught. Second, Guatemala, 45,604. Third is El Salvador, 44,574. Fourth is Honduras, 30,585. Number five is India, 2,867. Number six, Brazil, 1,841. Seven, Ecuador, 1,770. China, number eight, surprising me, 1,498. Romania's got 1,307. And Nicaragua, 730. So, and of course, this doesn't give you any, you know, indication of exactly what these people were up to, like what their motivation was to come into the country. Also, you'll find this interesting, Abraham. Six Canadians came across the Mexican border. They're just going back home.
Yeah, about five came through the North Canadian border.
I'm not too worried about the Canadians, but it's interesting just to look at those numbers because it's a high number of people in total. 264,165 people so far, first 6 months of this year, and those are only the ones that have been apprehended. A little more than half of them not from Mexico.
Yeah, this is interesting because it's something we don't realize or think about that southern border is a lot more than the relationship between Mexico and the United States. It's a lot more than even the drug cartels and the Mexican people trying to come into the United States. It's about national security, and it's about not making the southern border a causeway for anyone to enter the United States. And it's similar to what we're seeing in Europe, since I think most people are more familiar with that analogy that you have the Mediterranean Sea, you have people from all over the Middle East just getting boats and crossing and trying to get anywhere they can. And they're from everywhere, all the way from Afghanistan, India, Pakistan, Iraq, hundreds of miles and around in the region in Africa. And we're seeing the same thing here, except South America, I think that's not necessarily unexpected, but with the Chinese and other and India, the other Asian nations, it is interesting to see who's coming in, and that's quite a few people, and it's a little disconcerting because how many more haven't they caught that could have come from anywhere as well?
Well, and even the people coming from those different nations, it doesn't necessarily mean, I mean, they may have been citizens of those nations, but it doesn't mean that they, and how long have they been there? We don't know. Where did they come from originally? You know, that's not recorded in this data. Are they self-radicalized? We don't know those things. So it is interesting. It'll come up in the campaigns. I mean, that'll be a topic that'll come up. They'll probably hit Donald Trump with it more than anybody, because of some of what he has said about trying to close down some of that illegal immigration. But when he says close down illegal immigration, the other side says you're racist. So it is very interesting to see just how that that plays out, because really illegal immigration has been a major, major problem over these last 8 years. But it's just interesting to see the way that it gets spun, because it should be a topic that the current administration has to answer for, but yet they turn it around and say, "Well, you're racist. You need to stop being racist." But it's just a way to get the heat off of themselves.
Yeah, Trump has faced more criticism over illegal immigration. He hasn't done anything. He just said a few words about it. I mean, and those can bear scrutiny or people can comment on them, but he's not in charge of policy. He's not deciding how things are done. He doesn't have any effect on what's going on the southern border, and the current president does, and people haven't nearly vetted him as much on this issue as they have someone who hasn't even handled it yet. So it is an interesting how the media has flipped it and how the attention has stayed on someone that might do something rather than on someone who is doing something or not doing something, maybe is a better way of saying it. Because immigration, it's been an issue through all of American history, but today is different, and it's something that you can't just sweep in the back burner. I mean, there's so much going on in the news in this nation. It's easy to forget about, but it is one of the top issues, I think, and it's something that, because Mexico's right beside us, it is our own border. It's always going to be there, and we always have to address it somehow. So it is just a weird campaign season, how the debates on what people might do rather than what's being done right now.
Yeah, it's really strange. It's like that Washington Post article we were talking about yesterday, how the title was, you know, after eight years after hope and change, people are more frustrated than ever. They said they're frustrated about the two candidates coming in. Not all the problems that, I mean, there's been so many things happening in these last 8 years. Like, even when you start talking about immigration, it's one of those things where I think, oh, yeah, that's right. I kind of forgot about that because there's been so many other things come up. But that's a major problem. You can think about all the footage of those people just coming across on the trains. And they were, you remember they had to open some military bases to house people. And that just kind of, nobody talks about it anymore. But I bet if you went down there and really investigated, it would be pretty eye-opening to see what's happening. And then, of course, there's the anti-Trump rallies that they had in, what was down, I forget where it was. It was somewhere in that area, California or somewhere. And there were people holding signs saying, "Make America Mexico again." Now, I get it. That's supposed to be a clever, you know, turn of phrase. But no, let's not. Let's keep America as it is and... You know, they should be working to make Mexico good, you know, make it as good as it can be. Or, you know, if people want to come here, there's certainly legal ways to do that. But it is just interesting to see how that border is just pretty open to just about whoever is coming across. North Korea has been busy again. They launched 3 ballistic missiles last night. North Korea launched 3 missiles Monday, according to a statement from the U.S. Strategic Command in Nebraska. The statement said that North Korea launched 2 Scud tactical ballistic missiles back-to-back and was followed by another intermediate-range ballistic missile. The North American Aerospace Defense Command determined the missile launches from North Korea did not pose a threat to North America. They pretty much shot them across the country, their country, and they crashed into the waters off the East Coast. So they said they flew about 310 to 375 miles, displaying a sufficient range to reach entire South Korea. And South Korea's military was analyzing how far the third missile flew. They think they all flew about 300 miles. So just one of those things, saber rattling, look what we could do if we wanted to sort of thing. And it's interesting because they do this often enough where, at least for myself personally, I read that headline and I just kind of move on. You know, North Korea shooting more missiles off. But, you know, one of these days, you never know. They could put something on there. They certainly aren't becoming friendlier, that's for sure.
Yeah, it is. It is weird to think about North Korea and how they're the only nation that attacks water.
And they're undefeated.
Yes, yeah. They've won every war against the ocean there because they fire the artillery shells and the missiles into the water.
How many fish have been killed?
Yeah, if Greenpeace wants a cause, they should go after North Korea for waging war on sea life. But it's ridiculous to even talk about their strategy and what they're doing. But it does draw the attention of the world, and they want attention, and they want to be feared, I guess. At least the water to fear them, maybe. But it is, but in all seriousness, though, they could easily steer those missiles towards an actual target, and thankfully they haven't yet. But it is a constant threat, and they're just such a unstable country with an unstable leader, and just the oddities of it that you just never know what they're going to do.
And it's kind of a it's a little bit of a look into the near future, because we know that the Clinton administration worked with North Korea and kind of claimed that, hey, we've normalized relations somewhat, and they're not going to do anything with their nuclear program, et cetera. And that they obviously have continued to. And so we're going through the same thing with Iran now. But the difference is Iran's a lot more specific in what they want to do, and they have a bigger ambition than just flexing their muscles occasionally. So that's probably the thing that's the most interesting about it, is that we tried to have all these negotiations with North Korea. They said it was great, things were fine, we wouldn't have to worry about them anymore, and now they're still over there shooting off their missiles. So Iran's, of course, doing the same thing. There was even another document yesterday released showing that Iran could speed up their process pretty quickly. So there's some details about that. They're out there, some headlines. So definitely not, it's not cooling down. And it also highlights that how much China doesn't mind. They could easily stop North Korea from doing that, but they're happy to sit there and let them shoot some things into the sea to be a distraction, if nothing else. Abraham, do you consider yourself to be a foodie?
I do not, no.
A foodie would be someone who is very specific, very particular, I guess, about exactly what they're eating. The millennials, they have some food trends, apparently. And so they rate their this is the Washington Post here, they rate their food trends, and this is what the millennials say they're interested in. 40% enjoy sweet and spicy foods. Fair enough. I think a lot of people like that. 36% really enjoy quinoa. You a big quinoa fan?
Not particularly.
35% feel they must have meals served in bowls. I don't know if that's cereal or just general bowls, but that's an interesting one. 26% are very particular about craft beer. That's a big one. People are particular about their beer, and it makes me kind of chuckle, because there's been a little bit of a trend for these, as it says, craft beer, these Americana sort of beers. And so you can go to the liquor store around here, and they have some, and they sell them at a higher price because they're craft beers, right? And a lot of them, or not a lot of them, but a few of them, I remember from growing up, because they were made just down the road from where I grew up in Wisconsin, and they weren't considered anything out of the ordinary. It was like, it was just regular. But now, because it's trendy, all of a sudden, they're drinking all these American beers again and paying. I mean, if you're one of those companies, you're like, yeah, sure, we'll charge you more. But I remember growing up and seeing that stuff all over the place, and it wasn't considered anything special.
Yeah, it is amazing how a trend can make a lot of money. Because in Canada, we have something called Alexander Keith's Indian Pale Ale. So it's an IPA, and it's Nova Scotian on the East Coast where I live, so people would drink it, and I didn't think anything of it. And then when I came down for college, IPAs were becoming popular with beer. They're like, oh, do you like IPAs? Like, oh, have you ever had one? And like all these things. I'm like, I guess so. Like, just give me something to drink. I don't really care what it is. But it is just interesting. I mean, people, like, I just grew up with these different things. They're around me. And then all of a sudden they get trendy, and because someone made it popular, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, 24% of millennials feel they must partake of artesian ice cream. I like ice cream. I don't know that it needs to be artesian. It sounds expensive.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the people I know, they make homemade ice cream, which is, I think I prefer that to store-bought ice cream.
But, yeah, me too.
But yeah, I'm not even sure if I understand completely what artesian ice cream even is and how it's different from everything else.
20% really feel they must have a cold brew coffee. That's popular. You see that all over the place. You like cold? Well, you're not a coffee drinker.
No, I don't drink coffee.
Yeah. I remember actually the first time I saw somebody drinking one of those. It was back in high school. So not to date myself too much here, but over 15 years ago at least. And this guy, he was a little ahead of his time as far as being a hipster. And I remember seeing him, he had it in his locker and he took a drink. I said, what is that? Is that soda or something? Because that's what most kids would be drinking. He's like, no, it's coffee. And I was like, but it's cold though. He's like, oh yeah. And I just thought that was the worst idea I'd ever heard of. But, you know, I don't mind it. I've come to appreciate it. But yeah, he was ahead of his time. So his name was Jesse. If you're listening, Jesse, way to go. You were way ahead of your time on the cold brew coffee. 18% really must have the farm to table dining, which again is humorous to me because I get it from a health standpoint, but growing up in Wisconsin, everything was farm to table pretty much because the farm was right outside your window. So yeah. It was commonplace.
Yeah, I mean, anyone who lives on a farm has like farm to table dining. So,
well, it's funny because I remember being a kid, you know, a lot of times you could easily go and get either produce out of your own garden or there was plenty of farmers market. I mean, it was all over the place. And it was like, yeah, no big deal. Oh, but if you got a chance to go to McDonald's or something, like that was a special occasion. And now it's completely flipped where, no, you know, oh, nobody wants to go there but farm to table. Now we're talking. So it's interesting how those things have changed. I don't know what this one is. Fusion cuisine. Are you familiar with that?
I do not know what that is.
Display my ignorance here. 12% feel they must have that. 11% like the pop-up restaurant. I'm guessing that's like a food truck or something. What's a pop-up restaurant?
Maybe it pops to the ground after you drive over it. I have no idea.
I'm not a millennial. 9% want the chef's tasting menu. And 9% like vegan fast food. Well, of course it'd be fast food. You don't have to do anything to it, right? It's not like you had to cook it, right? Well, exactly. Well, I guess you could, but there's another one here. I don't even know how to pronounce it, so I'm not going to say it. 5% like high-end food delivery. 5% like meal kit subscription. And 3% enjoy the specialty bitters. So there you go. If you're a foodie, that's your that's the list of millennials.
Yeah, it's well, usually on Twitter I'll see most of these things. People post what they're eating right before I unfollow them, and it is yeah, it's amazing. Just, I mean, I just I like food, but I don't care that much about compared to others, which is to each their own. But it is amazing how much we define ourselves by what we consume nowadays.
Yeah, it's kind of an image thing. Farm to table dining. I enjoy mouth to stomach dining. That's one of my favorite.
Right. That's the best kind of.
That's
dining.
One of the best ones I have found. But so those are some of the foodie trends that are out there. It's kind of funny too because we are in such a blessed nation that we can even talk about this type of thing. You think about other nations, they're like, we just eat whatever you have a chance to eat. So it just does highlight some of the blessings here. Those are some of the headlines today that are happening out there. The Key of David program today is on What is Truth? A really, really good show for this time of the year because of all the political campaigns and because of all the grandiose statements that are being made. But what about truth? What's the truth of the matter? Wouldn't you just love to have a political debate where each side told the truth?
That's right.
Wouldn't that be stunning?
It'd be the shortest political debate ever.
What's your ideas? Honestly, I've got none. See you next week. Yeah, it would just be so different than what we see. And it's so interesting because I think most people assume that politicians are for the most part lying, and yet at the same time kind of believe them. It's just a weird mix where somebody, you know, you'll have a politician say something and you'll know that's not true or that's not going to work. But yet somehow people still say, well, yeah, you know, I'll believe what they say. Like even yesterday, there was that article about people being frustrated with these new candidates and talking about the current president in a positive light. And so people in the comments section, they get into arguments about it. Oh, how could you like the president? He did this, this, and this. And then somebody comes back and they say, oh, but he did all these other things. And these other things. And they had this list, but none of it's true. It's just talking points that you've heard on TV. You know, things that are easily disproven, like, oh, the economy's doing great and all this, which surface level, maybe it looks that way, but if you dig deeper, you know that it's not. quite a few things like that. And I was just amazed that somebody would take every talking point that they were given by the media and cite it like this is indisputable fact. And I think there's a fair number of people like that.
Yeah, well, it reminds me of a Churchill quote I just heard recently, and Churchill once said that the best argument against democracy as a form of government is a 5-minute conversation with a voter. And he was getting across that sometimes the electorate can be misinformed or ignorant, or they're gullible. And we've seen that with, I think, especially right now in the last decade, where we've seen amazing lies, things that are easily disproven, but yet there's still talking points even after 8 years of proof that none of them are true. And it's just amazing that people hold on to that, or people are just rebuffed by a simple statement like, well, we don't remember. That's, let's move on now. People died. Like, that's not important. All these different things where it never used to be like that.
Wasn't it Hitler that said, you know, if you tell a big enough lie long enough, people are going to believe you?
Yes.
Just keep saying it over and over again. It reminds me of being a kid in, like, grade school, you know, and everybody's had that situation either against them or maybe they've seen it with somebody else where, oh, one or two kids, they just start making up a lie about somebody, you know, on the playground. It could be anything. They just make up a lie about them, and they just say it. And everyone knows it's a lie. They know it's a lie. The people saying it know it's a lie. The people hearing it know it's a lie. Everybody does, and yet it doesn't matter. It's just they're going to mock and make fun and, you know, and pick on the kid. And that happens, and it's funny. It doesn't really change as people get older. Even though you know certain things are lies, it's just easy to believe them and go along with the trend. And I think that's really probably the biggest factor is what's the popular trend in thinking. That's what people will go along with. So this Key of David program on what is truth is so vital, because you have to find out what is truth. And then the hard thing is facing it and, you know, admitting it. And but this is a very important program. And it's a very important question. What is truth? The Key of David program today here on KPCG. That'd be the name of my campaign if I ran for president. What is truth? I would lose and hugely. Trump a Daily Radio Show today with your host, Stephen Fleury from Edstone, England. He talks about this axe attack in Germany yesterday. And this Afghan teenager, of course, and there's those injuries. He mentions how this will only exacerbate the debate over the presence of the refugees in Germany. Most Germans already felt strongly one way or the other on the issue, and now this will only polarize it further. Many fear that the scourge of terrorism is starting to spread across Europe. You know, and what are you supposed to do as a German citizen when you know that certain people from the Middle East have attacked other people with an axe out of the blue? Next time you see somebody that is, you know, from the Middle East, how do you not think about that? I know a lot of people would say, well, that's racial profiling and all that, but how do you not think about that?
Yeah, especially when you're just on a train going to work, and it's easy to conceal anything on a train. I mean, I traveled on those kind of trains a lot, going to school and everything, and people can carry anything you want on there. And and there's no security seeing what you're bringing with you or where you're going and all that. So it is a very vulnerable situation, and I think everyone over there feels vulnerable and afraid, and they don't want to live like that. And I mean, no one wants to live afraid and under the threat of being killed or hit with an axe. I mean, that's something that they're going to demand be changed. And I mean, for them too, the Germans have a long history of taking strong action as well. I mean, that's the precedent that they set. So they're a far different people than America and how we handle the same situation.
Stephen Fleury also talks about how the RNC convention began yesterday. It was marked by a heated debate, the defeat of the Never Trump movement, a lack of enthusiasm, and some fiery speeches. In the midst of all these words, no one is discussing character. and that is the key to causing change in the nation. Each of us must grow individually and build character in order to make America great again. And even like that Washington Post article we were talking about earlier with the people not being happy with the Hope and Change after 8 years and not being excited about these new candidates, the people that they interviewed, all of them said, well, I don't like these candidates. But the one thing that no one mentioned was their own personal character. You know, it's easy to look at a candidate and say, well, I don't like that person. But what about ourselves? You know, what kind of people are we individually? And that's what is being talked about here on this Trumpet Daily Radio Show with Stephen Fleury. Make sure you listen for that program that's coming up here in a bit on KPCG. If you can't catch it live or one of the replays, you can get the archives at kpcg.fm. We're going to take a quick break here and let you listen to another one of the musical pieces that was put on at the Philadelphia Youth Camp Talent Showcase. This is a song titled Hungarian Dance. It's a flute piece. It's played by Leah Hyde. She's 13 years old. And again, this was a performance from last week in Armstrong Auditorium, the Philadelphia Youth Camp Talent Showcase. Thank you.